Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Oh, thanks for waking up with us on this Friday. I know you've been up for a while.
I was going to say, you think they're just waking up?
Some people, you know, these lazy youngsters, they don't wake up right till right about now, 10 o'clock in the morning. What's happening in the world? What better place to find out what's happening in the world of politics than with my pal, Kristen Bry?
Hello.
Yes, she's always on top of things. And then, of course, Bill McCotch, Republican strategist. Hello, Bill.
Hello, good morning.
Fresh from Miami. I'll be going to the warm climbs starting tomorrow. Joe Sopecki, where are you going, Joe?
We're going to Europe.
Yeah, they're going.
Oh, that's right.
When do you leave?
A couple weeks.
Yeah.
Got some time left.
No, we'll miss you.
I'm the only one who's not going anywhere.
Yeah, well, you're young. All right.
Is that right?
Actually, you and Joe aren't that much different in age, are you?
Joe's like four.
I'm much older than
4 years ago.
Much, much older.
You can't see it in our faces.
Kristen's got the big one coming up next year.
Big one.
Yeah, generational shift. Middle age? Is that what middle age?
I don't know. Is 40 considered middle age now?
I think so.
For women.
Isn't 35
little...
already middle age?
You do not.
No, 35?
I mean this with all. You do not look 40.
40.
I'll take that.
You're
five.
Doing great.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
I don't want to delay the start of the conversation, but we're at the remote from the Delafield Century, Albrecht Century, which is my favorite grocery store in the world. Guy comes up.
You were pretty excited on that show, by the way.
I was.
I listened in there.
I love that place. Anyway, because I worked in a grocery store.
So
all
did
through,
I.
Yeah.
I was a bagger.
Yeah. We did real work. When men did real work. Right? Right, Bill? Yes.
Bagging groceries? Real work?
I qualified.
You weren't
for
building
Deca
the railroad.
We were building the railroad and bagging groceries.
I went to the Distributive Education Club's Nationals as a bagger.
There you go. So our lovely listeners who were fantastic that day, first words out of their mouth, Kristen, you are brilliant. Nothing, and then
period.
Wow. And then they silence. Then you're okay, too. Right.
I got a you're
Kristen,
okay.
You're brilliant. Hello, yeah. Steve.
And I agreed with the lovely listener that she is brilliant. All right. We have to start with the latest news. And Bill, you jump in this, because these redistricting stories across the country, now what did I hear? Another state's thinking about it.
Virginia.
We certainly have Florida. The governor made some news. Well, the Supreme Court, another one of these kick the can down the road things. These is, you know, pocket docket or emergency docket, whatever they call these things, basically letting the Texas redistricting mid-census
correct
stand.
Which was the beginning of the end of all of this,
yeah.
Right?
Right?
It started the whole thing. Texas passed a new law based on a court case that allowed them to redistrict mid-census, fairly unusual, at least in my lifetime, and it was approved by the legislature and signed by the governor. It was challenged in an appeals court a couple weeks back in Texas. I was actually in San Antonio, and we were trading texts that day, threw it out and said they had to work off the old maps. And late yesterday, the United States Supreme Court said, no, you got this wrong, appellate court. They can work off the newly passed maps, which should be around plus five Republican. And I think Joe and I are actually going to agree on this, but not necessarily. The lines will change, but the politics maybe have changed too.
The Attorney General of Texas said this: Texas is paving the way as we take our country back district by district, state by state. Joe?
Taking it back from what? This is insane. It's always been insane, right? Like, the politicization of this process, where politicians think that they can pick their voters as opposed to voters picking their politicians and their elected leaders, is insane. And as technology has improved and targeting, and Bill and I who work on campaigns, we know this, like the specificity
with
which you can get down to, like, where the lines should be moved. We saw this in Wisconsin. We've literally seen the emails where Republican legislators are telling the, you know, the map drawers, I want this part of this community, but not that part.
I want this house.
Yeah, right? And like, it's just madness. And I believe it is ultimately going to end up a wash and not mattering at all.
You mean for in general, forever, or for next year?
For next
debits
year.
And credits.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because the 24 election results was a historic overperformance for Trump and Republicans,
right,
among Hispanic and Latino voters.
Right.
What have we seen even in the year since then? That's not, when you get those voters one time, it doesn't mean they're with you forever. And you're seeing a snapback. And so
definitely did in Virginia and New Jersey.
Right. And so what Texas has done is created an environment where actually more districts might be competitive, because in order to chip away at Democratic districts, you have to take
Republican
votes
bit
from Republican, yep, districts. And what did we see this week? another 13-point overperformance by a Democrat in a special election. Well, now instead of five more seats for Republicans, if those demographic trends continue and voting trends continue, it could mean that now there's 10 more Democratic members of Congress, right? Like,
well,
it's all just so
three
stupid.
More states that I think are going to do this. It looks like Florida is going to do this, according to the governor, Ron DeSantis. It looks like Indiana may finally do this. Theirs will only be a net of one to Republicans. But it appears that after the first of the year, Virginia is going to put a referendum on their April ballot to allow them to do it as well.
And that one had a big swing left, right?
I think it went from 5-4
to like
9-1. 9-1.
Yeah.
So it's plus 3 or 4 for Democrats.
Beyond the plus or minus stuff, what do you, for both of you guys, for the voters out there, independents, Democrats, Republicans, the gaming the system sort of argument, does this play with voters?
No.
They hate it.
Yeah. And I was surprised. I bet against this. Joe was right about it. So was Steve. California voters undid a independent commission. And I believe, I'm going to check it at the break, that Virginia would have to do the same thing. I think their maps were drawn by an independent commission as well. So that blows out of the water this notion that independent commissions are the best path because they can clearly be undone at the whim of any legislature.
But with the Supreme Court decision yesterday, or I guess lack of a decision, what does this mean for the current legal cases and then any new legal cases that could ever be brought anytime we draw maps anymore? Is the Supreme Court basically saying, like, we're not involved. Do what you want. Like,
they haven't decided yet. And yeah. and the biggest redistricting and line drawing question of them all is the last remaining vestige of the Voting Rights Act,
right.
Which this Supreme Court will be ruling on. And if they undo, I think it's Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, right. Then all hell is going to break loose.
That could be plus 2022 Republican if it happens in time. You and I have talked about this, KB, where if they wait until June, most states won't be able to change them.
Yeah.
And what that is, do we have time for this or are we going to get to break?
Let's get to break. Tease it.
I'll walk through what the Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act would mean for representation in Congress.
All right, you think you got the smarts? Well, we know this studio is full of people that have a lot of smarts, but join Vince Vitrano, Greg Hill, Eric Bilstead, Sandy Max for WTMJ's Trivia Showdown next Wednesday, December 10th, 7 p.m. The official name of the place is Trattoria De Carlo and Pizzeria, but everybody knows it as De Carlo's. It is the best. My friend Frank Carini is the owner. Here's a little tip. Ask him about the Pizza Romana crust. It's absolutely amazing. My friend Carlo Padone sells it all across the country. It's lighter. It's better. Their food is amazing. If you want traditional Sicilian fare, they have that. Show up early. I know it's about donating all that stuff. I want you to do that. Donate a new unwrapped toy or cash. Cash is appreciated for the Capco's Kids of Kids. But the food is amazing. Have a glass, a couple of wine or something else. It is fantastic. Show up. I wish I could be there. I'm going to be on vacation next week. Otherwise, poor scheduling. I should have been there. But whatever. We had fun at ours. So show up for Vince, Greg, Eric, Sandy, next Wednesday, 7 p.m. at the Carlos in Oak Creek, presented by Quizmaster Trivia, benefiting, as I said, Capco's Kids to Kids Toy Drive. Bring that toy, bring that cash, or just text 855-616-1620 to donate. Bring your crew, play for a great cause. These are fun events. You will have fun at the Carlos in Oak Creek.
All right, Josepecki, tell us what Article 2 of the
Section
Voting Rights
2 Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act prohibits the dilution of voters based on their demographics. So we're going to use an example that I think is easier to understand. Mississippi, very Republican state.
Yep.
Right? Its black population is condensed in largely one part of the state, right? So there would be a way to draw that state district where you crack apart, I believe it's Jackson, is the city, right? The urban core where most black voters live. So you could draw a map of districts in Mississippi that took little slivers of Jackson.
You mean like they're trying to do here in Wisconsin?
No, like they did in Nashville with the district that was up last week. But the Voting Rights Act is you can't do that or you don't have to do that. And so for years, Mississippi has had a Democratic member of Congress. And it's almost always an African-American. And so across the South, you have Democrats in Congress. They are almost always black or Latino because they come from, you know, disadvantaged minority, whatever term you want to use.
Majority minority.
Well, they come from districts that they represent. They represent
so
the people who voted them in.
If the Supreme Court does away with Section 2, what you will see is southern states try to draw new maps that dilute the voting power of minority communities, and you will lose, as a result of that, some number of Democrats in the House from the South, from these Republican states.
If we make states all red or all blue, any idea what the net result of that? If you just let gerrymandering go, what would the net result of that be? Anyone know?
I don't.
I don't either.
I mean, it would probably look similar to what the Senate looks like, right?
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
Probably.
Where there's two states with a mixed Senate delegation.
Yeah.
It's down to two.
Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Yeah.
The last holdout.
That's wild. All right.
That is wild.
I know that this is a moonshot, but what would proportional representation actually look like? Because it feels like, as you said, most constituents, most voters, unless you're a true partisan, hate the political games happening with redistricting. And I've been seeing this more. Obviously, it's because I follow a fair amount of like civically minded outlets that talk about like Final Five voting and stuff like that. But as far as a proportional representation that doesn't come down to rigging the lines, it's probably never going to happen. But could one of you eloquently explain what that could look like and what it could solve?
What it should look like is a national actual Iowa model. Robin Voss and your Republican friends in the legislature tried to borrow the branding of the Iowa style model. Mm-hmm. They did not want to do true Iowa style, where it is you take the politicians out of it and you have independent, like truly independent commissions draw the maps. I believe that was part of what was called HR 1, that when Biden was president and controlled Congress, they didn't have the 60 votes for, and they wouldn't break the filibuster to do. This would have created the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, would have addressed Citizens United, and it would have banned political gerrymandering, and Democrats didn't get it done. We should have gotten it done. But that's what it could look like as a federal
proportional
law.
I thought it was more about when you look at the entire popular vote, if we say we have eight congressional representatives.
For now.
And if, say, 60% of the vote voted Republican, that means six would be congressmen would be. And then if it was 50-50, it would be four and four. That's what I thought proportional
and that,
would
that's
meant.
A different way to do it. That's okay. Different than the Iowa style model. Sorry, I misunderstood the question.
Okay, that's fine.
We need to work on our democracy.
Yes.
We need to update systems that do not work anymore.
I think Joe's point was making headway until California. I think the Iowa model, as this thing started to mushroom, was like, yeah, maybe there's got to be a better way to do this. But it was an independent commission who created the California map, many of which, including me, thought it was rigged for Democrats to begin with. But then they just did away with it and are going to do one that's even more partisan. So I don't,
temporarily.
I don't. Well, there's like a temporary tax increase, right? I just don't buy it, and I think they did a lot of damage to the whole notion of independent.
But they only did
commission.
It in response to Texas.
Well, it maybe that's
so,
why they did it.
So here's my final thought on this. I can't believe we spent the first half of the show talking about this.
Well,
in order to fix something, sometimes it has to get well and truly busted and broken first. And I think that what we're seeing right now, this like escalating arms race, is going to be the best outcome for me is like people realize it is so broken that it has to be fixed in the next 4 years.
Well, we'll see.
For Republicans, if last second here, it's better to work on your agenda and stop worrying about the math.
That's a good segue, because when we come back, we're going to see what Republicans learned from, or Democrats learned from, Tuesday's special election, and what that means for their agenda ahead of the midterms. This is Point Taken. Stay with us.
It is Friday. That means Bill McCosh and Joe Sopecki join Kristen and I on Point Taken. Thanks for finding us on your radio dial or your internet stream, whatever it is, YouTube. We always appreciate that. If you missed any or all of the conversation, you can find it at, of course, WTMJ.com, or just put Point Taken in your search bar and you will be taken right to all of our shows going back to.
Think we're the first thing on for SEO?
You can find it on the
put Point
internet.
Taken in Google.
I listened last Friday in Miami.
Yeah,
nice.
See? Yeah,
that's
pretty good.
Pretty good.
We know the numbers are good because we look at them. We do. Go
pretty
ahead.
Happy.
Yeah.
All right. Texas. Not Texas. Tennessee. Tuesday night. Everybody won, it seems like. Everybody
everybody gets
a winner.
Prize. Everybody gets
all
a
right,
trophy.
Who wants to spin this first?
It is a warning sign for Republicans, in my opinion. It's not a five-alarm fire. It was outside the margin of error fairly comfortably, but it was, as Joe pointed out earlier, 13 points less than the president got. By the way, that number's a little distorted. You're never going to see those kinds of performances in a special election. People just don't turn out at the same rates. Democrats found a way to get their voters out more than Republicans did on Tuesday night. 65% of November voters on the Democratic side turned out, only 50% of Republican voters. Republicans have a problem, and I think it's one of inaction. They took 3 months off this fall. They need a heavy, heavy December where they're getting things done for the American people. And frankly, the next 6 months, they have to stay on that same pace. These constant breaks that they're taking is hurting them politically. Voters want action. They expect things. They want results, and they're tired of excuses. So Republicans, you can predict what's going to happen in November if they do not get to work. Okay. And it's going to be far worse than Tuesday night was.
Mm.
Joe?
I'm going to Bill's mostly right here, so I'm not going to be too hard on him.
Mostly right.
But the apples to apples.
It's better than I get from my wife.
The only part I'll quibble with is the turnout. Because I put this in the text, and you clearly didn't read it. In 2022, 180,000 voters voted in Tennessee 7. In the special election last week, 179,000 voted.
But that was a non-presidential year, 2022.
Correct. And 2026 is a non-presidential year. So the comparison you're trying to make is midterm over midterm, right? Like 24 turnout was higher, is higher. We're conflating a couple of things here. This was good for Democrats. This is good for Democrats. Politics doesn't work like this, but if you just move everything across the country 13 points, coast to coast, Democrats would have 248 seats in the House and 58 Senate seats after next year's election.
Is that your prediction?
No.
He's saying politics don't work like that, but as far as just numbers.
Yeah. Right? I don't think that's what will happen. But I also don't think 13 points is the ceiling for like how bad it can get for Republicans, because they're not focusing on the economy. And we should talk more about that.
All right, we'll do that after the break.
After the news, which is coming up, local news with, of course, Connie Weber and ABC, we'll talk boating. Remember when boating was fun? And Pete Hegseth said, hold my beer. And it changed that dynamic forever. That the dangerous world of Pete Hegseth. Latest now from ABC. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, the political roundup.
That's very important conversation. Off air, right?
Yeah. we're judging beauty contests now in the interim there. Thanks to Connie Weber for the news update, and thanks to ABC as well. Bill McCosh joining us as always. Joe Zepecki in studio. Kristen and Steve, point taken. I'm going to start with you, Bill, because much of this Hegseth conversation to me is we don't know all the details. It sounds like some members of Congress are now being informed and seeing some of these videos. Overview, general 40,000-foot view on this story. What do you sense is happening here to Pete Hegseth, but more importantly, the country and sort of the direction of how we conduct our foreign affairs?
I think we got misinformation in the first story from the Washington Post, where they said Hegseth ordered kill them all, which was the second strike on the drug boat. That isn't what happened, and they've now retracted that. ABC has even said that wasn't factually correct. Members of Congress were briefed in the skiff yesterday by the admiral who was on the boat or directed the operation. He did it with a JAG officer, which is an attorney sitting next to him. It was all done by the book. So the notion that somehow this was a war crime is it's hyperbolic on the Democratic side. There's no evidence that that's true. And even Democrats came away from the hearing yesterday, the private hearing, thinking that the admiral was above board and was honest and credible. So I don't know how this is ultimately going to shake out. I've said it before on the show. I think as it relates to Hegseth, he's going to have a brighter light on him forever, for as long as he's there. And honestly, I could see him coming back to Congress when Trump's no longer president. So he will be held to a very different standard than Barack Obama and his Secretary of Defense were during their administration, whereby potentially as many as 800 civilians were killed by drones. They were never held to this standard. So I think they are doing what's in the country's interests, which is doing the best they can to stop the flow of drugs from South America to the United States. They've been very successful at that so far. You can quibble about the methods. They believe they have the legal authority to do it, and I guess we're going to see.
Does he survive this? You think yes?
Yeah, I do.
How does pardoning the former Honduran president who was convicted of moving hundreds of tons of cocaine into the United States, how does freeing him align with this war on narco terrorists?
I think it has more to do with Venezuela on that one, to be honest with you. Trump is clearly focused on Venezuela. I think he's going to get Maduro out before too long.
So we're going to let someone who moved hundreds of tons of cocaine out of prison from West Virginia, a guy who literally flooded the streets of America with drugs, he gets out of jail. But in the Caribbean, if you're on a go-fast boat that we think might have
a thousand,
I'm still not convinced we do know.
They got the technology. They know how many nose hairs are captain of the boat.
Then why
has.
Don't we know the names of any of these people?
I think we do.
Then tell us.
I'm with you on that.
You're Mr. Transparency.
I'm with you.
You know what?
That.
On those Obama drone strikes, they briefed the Gang of Eight. They said, this is the name of the U.S. citizen who is supporting Al-Qaeda.
That's not transparency, by the way.
But it came out. It's public. We know that he ordered a drone strike on a U.S. citizen because he was supporting terrorist activity. And he made that case. You can criticize. It was challenged in court. There was a whole to-do. The inconsistency of this administration's, we're going to say one thing, we're going to do another thing, we're going to pardon in yet a third way. It doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't do a darn thing to lower people's costs. As to Hegseth, he was in over his head from day one. This week, the unclassified and classified versions of the Inspector General report came out that he did jeopardize the safety of American soldiers, airmen, Marines, troops, by divulging strike packages in an unsecured messaging platform. That in and of itself should be pack your bags, get out of Dodge, you're done. But Trump won't do it because Trump doesn't care.
And I guess, Bill, well, now I have two questions. One is the Hegseth question of, do you think he's in over his head?
Obviously.
Guy has degrees from Princeton and Harvard. I mean, he's very well educated.
I know, but I know people who have degrees from those places, and they're smart.
He's a veteran. He's got a military record.
So you don't think
he's... I do not believe he's over
his head. So then second question, because I've been asking this all week.
Now,
what is the...
Having said that, managing a massive...
The world's largest bureaucracy.
Is a challenge. I don't care what your background is. If you do not have public management experience, Steve knows this. That is a challenge.
That's where he's in over
his head. And that's what I'm saying. This is why, like, those degrees, I'm not saying he's not smart. I'm not saying it is a different thing to have. This is what we're talking about with the governor's race. It's like, all right, you're smart, but, like, can you do it? Can you do the job?
It? Right.
And so that's the question as far as you. So
can you run the government?
You think he's not in over his head?
I think he's got the brain matter, the gray matter to do the job, but he needs the right team around him. And, you know, that's what I would be questioning if I was the White House. If he's my guy, does he have the support staff around him to get this done?
This is great. But he was probably too smart for weekday Fox News, right? That's why they relegated him to be a weekend talk show host.
No,
because the audience couldn't handle how brilliant
he was. If we were making $2 million a year on this show, I'd be done with politics.
Oh, my God.
All right. So then separately, what's the end game with Venezuela? Is it to stop?
Maduro's gone.
So it is a regime change.
100%.
This is not about the end. Like, all right, if we stop the drugs coming in, war on drugs is over. Like, we know that
this
drugs are coming in from other places.
This is
a Maduro thing.
And chose not to honor that.
So it's a Maduro thing.
No question.
Okay.
I thought Republicans didn't do regime change wars of choice anymore.
Certain
but,
regimes.
Okay.
All right.
What does that do to lower prices?
Speaking of that,
well, you and I
so
are in agreement on that too. That
to
should be the focus.
Prices. What is Congress actually going to get done? What are they going to be focused on to change their political woes before the midterms? Stay with us. He's Bill McCashin, Joe Zepecki, Steve Scafidi. I am Kristen Bry, and this is Point Taken. Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry with Steve Scafidi, and we're talking to Bill McCashin and Joe Zepecki. All right. So, what do we think? Bill, you've already been on record today saying that Republicans need to focus on the agenda.
Yep.
They need to be, they actually get some legislation done. What do they start with as far as actually impacting? Steve and I talked about this week as far as Trump's numbers on affordability are underwater by a lot, and including people who voted for him this last time. Maybe not MAGA, but people who swung and voted for him this last time. So what can be done in the next 6 months to change this trajectory and actually provide some relief?
Healthcare, number one. And I think they're going to work on that for the next 3 weeks prior to Christmas. I don't know if there will or won't be a vote on the extension. I think one of the houses promised it, right?
The Senate will have a vote.
Will have a vote on it. I'm not sure that the House will, but...
There's 214 Democrats who have signed a discharge petition in the House. So if four Republicans don't want to see healthcare premiums skyrocket for millions of Americans... It could happen, but it would happen in the discharge process.
But I think they're going to, through regular order, try and get through the appropriations bills between now and Christmas. I think they are going to deal with health care. And one of the items they will deal with is PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, sort of the middleman. That's what I'm told from pretty good sources in D.C. I think that's helpful. The four of us have had a conversation on text this week. One of the great ideas I think I'm going to give Forbes magazine credit for is they had a housing idea, whereby you eliminated the capital gains tax on the sale of your primary resident to try and encourage more older people to sell their homes to younger people. There isn't enough stock. I mean, housing prices are all about supply and demand, and they're right now it's a buyer's market. It's been a seller's market for the past couple of years, and prices have skyrocketed. Monthly rents have now come down for four consecutive months. That's a first in quite some time. That's a good thing. So I could see some action on that, but it's all about making sure that they got time to implement the OB3, all the components of that, so that by next summer and with the energy things they've done, the economy's in far better shape. Because right now, people don't feel it. And until they feel it, Republicans are going to pay a price for that.
On the healthcare side, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't the president say he's opposed to any extension of the ACA subsidies?
I don't know that he said that. I'm going to take your word at it. He didn't say that during the negotiations. Maybe
it's got Obama's name on
it.
He's against it.
But I think what you're seeing now is yesterday the GAO released that one out of three people who were getting those subsidies was fraudulent. $22 billion worth of fraud. So that's the other thing. I would like to see a Doge 2.0 get to work here and have some rescission packages, which are actual permanent cuts to federal spending. I think that ultimately impacts inflation in the country. So it's time for Republicans to get to work. Enough chatter, and it's time to get on the field and get to work.
At a time when Mike Johnson's hold on the House has never been weaker.
I agree with that.
Other Republican members of Congress. So Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to be done in early January. It'll take a while to fill that seat.
It's not a bad thing.
Nancy Mace is now threatening to walk.
Not a bad thing.
But... you're running, that's minus two. So now it's 220 to 218.
Yep.
Right? Like, and there is reporting that there
is 218 to 213.
Huge frustration among the Republican conference, and that between now and the holidays, you might see more surprise retirements.
That's the prediction. We'll see.
And so, how are you going to get any of that done in a closely divided House with a mad king in the Oval Office who would rather spend time firing and hiring a new architect for his beloved ballroom than like actually bringing in leaders of the House and Senate to figure out an economic stimulus package or a job creation or a housing bill? Trump has no interest in any of that. And the economy is getting worse, not better. And there's more like flashing red signs ahead. Economic, like consumer pessimism is at least 17-month high. At least three of the last 4 months, the economy has shed jobs. The premium increases haven't even taken place yet. This is all like exhibition. It's January when the bills start coming due on these higher premiums. This is an economic cataclysm approaching, and Trump doesn't seem to want to do anything at all about it, except maybe levy some more tariffs.
How do we know that the premiums will go up if the GAO is right and there actually is $22 billion in fraud and we do away with that?
I did not see that report, but I find it very rich that your party, who didn't want 70,000 more IRS agents to crack down on fraud and ensure that people weren't cheating on their taxes, and you screamed bloody murder for years, now you're interested in fraud?
I'm very interested in fraud.
Then why didn't you want more IRS agents?
Detecting and prosecuting fraud is not a short term. It's a long term play.
And in Minnesota, it's going to take a long time.
You're not going to fix that in a month.
Nope.
So there has to be direct answers on the healthcare thing. Because I can guarantee, I don't care what your party is, if the cost of your healthcare explode in the next few months, you're going to be pissed about it. And they're going to point their finger at the President of the United States in his gold office. One more break before the top of the hour.
WTMJ, W277-CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
All right, we got about 2 minutes left before the top of the hour with Joe and Bill, Steve and me, Kristen. I know we really briefly wanted to touch on the mess that's happening in Minnesota as far as I don't even fully have my head wrapped around what happened. So I'll let Bill explain what Minnesota is facing right now as far as the cleanup.
So there's two issues. One relates to Medicaid and the other relates to food share. And there are reports of as much as $250 million of fraud on the food share side and maybe as high as $2 billion of fraud on the Medicaid side. A lot of it comes back to the Somali community. This isn't meant to be a racial discussion, but of the 86 people that have been arrested already for fraud, 76 are from the Somali community. Tim Walz, this has become a national story, maybe, you know, second to the Hegseth story this week as the biggest story in the country. And Keith Ellison, the AG there, I think are in some significant hot water. And the reason is they're not actually going to get to run these investigations anymore. Those are federal dollars. So mm-hmm. the DOJ is there. The FBI is there. I don't think we've seen the last of this. To Steve's point earlier, which is 100% correct. I mean, if we saw indictments by summer, that might be fast. But it could happen by fall. But I think you're going to see that impact the gubernatorial race in Minnesota in ways that we hadn't predicted prior to this.
Is this an idea of is this more negligence or an accusation of negligence or an accusation of corruption at the highest level that Tim Walz knew this was happening and turned his head?
Well, that's what Minnesota employees are saying. There are 500 Minnesota state government employees who've come out and said that they were warning the Walz administration. They did nothing. And in fact, they were punished for warning the Walz administration for this. And there was retribution. So we'll see if all that's true as part of this investigation. But this goes pretty deep.
Joe, 30 seconds before we got to go back.
I need to learn more about this story. I don't pay much attention to Minnesota stuff like this. I did find it interesting that with their Minnesota numbers are like a 9 to 10% range for potential fraud. Yeah. The Wisconsin rate, 4.4.
Yep.
Much better. Great job.
Good job, Wisconsin.
We should do better. It should be zero. There's always going to be leakage and seepage in these types of programs. And it's a policy question of how much energy and attention you devote to rooting out the bad actors, or in Trump's case, pardoning them if they're Republicans.
You almost went Speaker Mike Johnson on that non-answer about Minnesota. We'll take a break for news. That's next.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
All right. Happy Friday, everyone. We still have another half hour with Bill McCoshin and Joe Zepecki.
And Aaron from Greendale on the text line letting us know what he thinks. Thanks, buddy.
Joe got access to the text line during the break.
He's a little edgy now.
And so, you know, we get... What, Steve, you had one this week that you decided to... Oh, someone did not like Steve's criticism of Hegseth and how much time he spends on hair and makeup. And so I think your mic's not on.
Yeah, they said that I was...
But this is...
I needed more time in hair and makeup.
This is part of the game as far as being in the media and getting... making yourself available for all sorts of criticism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is... Joe taught me that. Yeah. I once had to call Joe after I was very frustrated with a misrepresentation of something that I wrote. And he goes... This is part of the job, Kristen. I go, okay, thank you. All right, anyways, Mandela Barnes in the race for governor. And then there was eight?
Seven.
If we're counting Zach Ropery and Brett Halsey.
The weird guy doesn't count.
Okay, so Mandela is in. reactions this week from a Mandela Barnes announcement. Joe Zepecki.
Thought he did a nice job. The insider class has insidery opinions. But what Mandela brings to this race is a lot of name recognition and a lot of positive feelings from the race he ran in 2022, from his service as lieutenant governor and in the state legislature. And, you know, starting in first place is a pretty good place to start from. I think Bill would agree, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there are lots of good candidates on the Democratic side. We have what I'm referring to as an embarrassment of riches, like Mandela Barnes, Sarah Rodriguez, proven good partners to Governor Tony Evers. Missy Hughes, fantastic Secretary of WEDC. David Crowley, fantastic county executive, leads the largest county in the state of Wisconsin, was able to work with Republicans and accomplish stuff. Kelda Royce, fierce advocate and champion for women's reproductive freedoms. Fran Hong, really important voice in the Democratic caucus in the assembly. And yeah, she's lefter than I am, but I think she has a really important role to play in all of this. So like, this is going to get sorted out and the voters will and should decide. But the fundraising piece that we're going to start to see into next year in January is going to be the biggest determinant of whether all seven or maybe eight, maybe we get another candidate next week. That's the rumors are out there around, you know, Joel Brennan's been pretty transparent in talking about maybe getting in. I'm not sure that all of those folks' names will appear on the ballot next August, but we've got 5-6 months to figure that out, right? If people don't see a path and they can't win support and get attention and get the donations to fuel a campaign, there's an off-ramp.
All right, so you're the Republican.
Yeah.
You see Mandela Barnes, who was unsuccessful but close in his race in 2022 for Senate. What do you make of this?
He's our favorite. We want him to win the primary.
He's your favorite?
Absolutely.
Wow.
We want him. We think he's the most beatable in that field. But let's size up the race a little bit. Tony Evers won in 2018 with 9 people, and he got 42%, even though Dan Bice had a wrong number on your show a few weeks ago. I know you're listening.
Texted in. I am listening. It was this.
I don't see anyone getting 42% out of that field, including Mandela Barnes. He is the front runner today. Joe's right about that. I'm not sure he's the nominee. And here's why I say that. The field will not clear for him the way it did in 2022 when he ran for U.S. Senate. We had incredible candidates. Alex Lazary had spent $12 million. Sarah Godlewski had spent $4 million. Thomas Nelson had spent $1 million or $1.5 million, but a credible candidate nonetheless. Out of Gaming County exec. They all cleared the field 2 weeks out. So nobody took a shot at Mandela. This field's going to take a shot at Mandela, and Republicans are going to take shots at him between now and August 11th. There's roughly 250 days until the primary. Announcement day may end up being Mandela's best day of those 250. I think it's going to be a very tough slog for him. I'm not convinced he's going to be the nominee, but he's the front runner today.
All right. So
who do you think is most likely to spring the upset? I'm just curious from your because
Rodriguez,
you're
I think, has a shot. She's got access to. She's apparently raised $2 million. She's got $2 million more coming from the Lieutenant Governors Association, and I think David Crowley has an opportunity too. And he has some key constituencies within the Democratic base that really would like to see him win. And I will close with this: there are a lot of constituencies in the Democratic base who tried to keep Mandela out. Mm-hmm. Because he's already lost statewide. That is not a good model on either side of the aisle. Once you've lost, you get a sort of a black mark, and it's hard to overcome that.
Well, it's interesting. Dan Schaefer, when he kind of outlined all this, I didn't realize there's not really a good track record for people, Republican or Democrat, running statewide 2 times and winning this. If they've lost the first time, coming back and winning a second time. Like, has anyone actually done it?
Bob Kasten in 1980. He lost.
That's a while ago.
He lost to Lee Sherman Dreyfus in 1978 for governor. He came back, won the primary for United States Senate, and then became the United States Senate.
And is that it?
That's the last one.
That's crazy.
I had jet black hair in
30 seconds for Democrats. Be for who you're for, right? There's no reason for Democrats to... Like Bill's egging us on. He wants Democrats shooting at Mandela. And like
it's going to happen. I don't have to egg you on.
But it doesn't need to happen. Because after the primary, Democrats who want to see a blue governor seat, we need to all come together. And so what I'm watching is to make sure this primary stays above board and that the constructive criticism between the candidates is fair and above board. I'm not opposed to that, but it's the nasty, stupid stuff that's going to like get my hackles up.
So no clearing the field nonsense or anything?
No.
Okay. Well, you're on the record, so we'll see.
I was on the record on this 6 weeks ago in the New York Times.
Yeah, we'll
read
see
a newspaper, would you?
Oh, that was a brilliant retort to what I did to him last.
Yeah.
All right. When we come back, let's say something nice. This is Point Taken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You keep saying your side is better. It's time to
say something nice
about the other side of the political aisle on Point Taken.
Come on, people now.
All right. It's that time to say something nice about the other side. Bill, do you have one locked and loaded?
I do. First of all, nice lead-in bump music, Isaac. That's perfect. Smile on your brother. I'm going to shock the listeners and probably you guys. I'm going to say something nice about the mayor-elect of New York City, Zohran Mamdani.
I didn't see that one coming.
He went to the White House two Fridays ago. We sort of chirped about it.
We talked about it beforehand.
Yeah, you were here beforehand, and then it happened after we were off air.
A crap show. It wasn't. It was... and in fact, since then, there have been no snipes back and forth from either Trump or him. I was impressed with Mondami's control in the room. I thought he was going there to make a show. I think Trump thought he was going there to make a show, which would have made it a S show, as we all predicted. He was well-behaved. For some reason, it looked like they got some things done, or at least came to a gentleman's agreement on how they're going to coexist. And I give the kid credit.
I mean, look like he charmed the pants off of Trump.
You've never seen Donald Trump look at any of his children or his wife with the adoration he was gazing at Mamdani.
I mean, but we also haven't seen a single Democratic leader look at Mamdani the way that Trump looked at Mamdani. Yeah. Like, it was wild.
That was a good day for the internet.
Kids got better, more skills than I gave him credit for.
Kids got game.
Yeah.
That's a good one, Bill. Joe.
I'm going to say something nice about Republican United States Senator Tom Tillis. I don't know. We'll check with Aaron on if he's an expert on the laws of war and armed combat. But his take on the double tap boat strike is, quote, somebody made a horrible decision. Somebody needs to be held accountable, end quote. Accountability used to be a thing that both sides could agree on. It's in very short supply in Washington, D.C., and I think in our society and culture. So hip, hip, hurrah for Tom Tillis wanting to see some accountability.
I mentioned that earlier this week. I was also going to say, it seems like Rand Paul continues to be a more independent voice as far as his criticism or standing by what he thinks is right. I think he also had similar suspicions around everything having to do with these boat strikes, having to do with what we're doing in Venezuela. So I will, my Say Something Nice is Rand Paul.
That's nice. Yeah.
It's yours.
For you to say something is like that about Rand Paul.
I'm the mean one here. I'm not saying
that. you're not someone that generally agrees with Rand Paul. Mine, not politics at all. Hugh Jackman. Every media outlet in Milwaukee should thank him tremendously because he's going to give them their posts, their tweets, their whatevers more attention than they've gotten in probably the last 5 years because he was here this week and he did everything. And I'm not even a huge, like, what's the thing he does in the movies? The Wolverine or Milverine or whatever the hell it is?
No, Milverine's the Milwaukee guy. Yeah. Wolverine is the actual.
That's the only thing he didn't do was appear with Milverine.
Yeah. He heard about it, though. Yeah. He heard about the Milverine's a thing. And he posted that on his own Facebook page.
Regardless.
You're not a Milwaukee
to
guy.
To Hugh Jackman, well done. I mean, he did everything. He went everywhere. He talked to everybody. He was super nice. I love it when a Hollywood person comes here.
But it seemed for 24 hours like maybe he was thinking of running for governor.
Absolutely. So Hugh Jackman, well done. I mean, we need more of that, don't we think?
Since you're going on vacation, I'll let it slide. But that is very much not the essence of what this segment is supposed to be about. That's more of a grab bag. So your grab bag better be pretty good.
My grab bag is more heartfelt.
There's accountability right there.
Love to see it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So when we come back, we will do a grab bag. We'll hear what Steve's got to say. Stay with us.
All right, since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
All right. You said you had a good grab bag. You're out for the next week, so.
Yes, I have two of them, so I'll do one for next week and one for this week. One is sort of a recommendation. I already sent mine in for our newsletter, but if you have not seen the Netflix series Victoria, it is spectacular. Victoria.
I haven't even heard of it.
Watch it. It is amazingly well acted. It looks amazing. And it actually does historically stay pretty close to the truth. Her relationship, eventual marriage to Prince Albert. Amazing story. So check that out.
Who's in it?
I didn't recognize the actors. They weren't famous actors, but it's just brilliantly done. And I've watched, I think, six of the episodes already. Fantastic. Anyway.
Does it answer the age-old question what her secret was?
I'm not aware of what her secret was. So, I mean, it explains.
Victoria had a secret?
It explains her dynamic personality.
Oh. I got it. Victoria's secret. He's talking about the underwear catalog.
Don't step on my. I got one more. This is, and you were there. I love doing remotes. One, because it's live and it's fun. But the folks at Albrecht Century in Delfield, they always are great hosts. But the listeners who come up and donate, including, I mean, they're dropping $100 in there. For Capco's kids the kids' toy drive. And I love the commentary. Jim from Economowoc dropped some serious cash in there. Mm-hmm. I love that interaction. That's the best of what we do. I love that we still get to do that. So we want more opportunities for that in the next year. That's my
live broadcast. We love it.
Yes.
All right. Bill McCaution.
My grab bag is about Michael and Susan Dell. This week, they announced they were going to contribute $6.25 billion to these Trump accounts. They'll go to 25 million children in America, mostly of low to moderate income. $250 doesn't sound like much, but when you couple it with the $1,000 that every newborn child is going to get called the Trump account, that amount of money by the time that kid is 18 could easily be $171,000. It's a game changer. If it can't be touched until retirement, it could be over $2 million. It, for young people that grow up with nothing, it gives them some hope, something to look forward to.
I'm trying to think out the math. How is that? Like, how did you get $170,000 in 18 years? Is that what the compounding interest would be?
So you assume 7%, it doubles every 7 years. Yeah. So 250 doubles by age 7, 500. Doubles again by age 14, that would be 1,000.
Okay. And it assumes
and then it adds 170,000 in the next 4 years. That's the math on that. Trump math.
It includes a $50 a month contribution.
Yes. So okay. It has to be sustained beyond just the initial.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Who's next?
So yes.
So the Dells.
Yes, the Dells. Yeah. Okay, great.
Great job. Or billionaires could just pay more in taxes. I don't know. Crazy idea. Sure. Did we talk about death by lightning?
We've talked about it, but you can go ahead.
Oh,
you loved it.
Loved it. The story of little known President Garfield, the man from Ohio, who was assassinated shortly into his term.
Spoiler alert.
It's history,
Steve. The Titanic also sank, Steve.
Yes. Get it?
Check it out. It's on Netflix. It's fabulous. Wisconsin native Brad Whitford, starring role.
What's it called?
Death by Lightning. It's fabulous. Check it out.
Whitford always lights up a room whenever he's in one. That's the good thing about him.
And I'm sorry for the really bad Victoria's Secret joke.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
I didn't either.
It took me a second, but I got it. All right, but I'm also someone who's actually shopped there. All right, so mine, I found this, I think, little known story. So there is a city in Belgium of about 80,000 residents. And in 2019, it established a permanent citizens council and assembly to increase accountability and reinvigorate the agenda setting power of common citizens. So they just appoint 30 random citizens to power. So you don't have to run an election. And since they've done this, the council has given topics to consider and make recommendations to lawmakers. And it has already impacted housing, education, and mental health. And it even inspired a similar system in Paris. And I just think I wanted to give a shout out to creative civic duty and recommending people to get involved, even if they don't have political aspirations, because sometimes the best ideas come from the people who are actually living through the issues in their town.
Wisdom of crowds.
I don't know. It's Belgium. I think I'm butchered that name. Mm.
Since we have a little bit of time left, the Green Bay Packers play the Chicago Bears on Sunday.
Big game.
3:25 at Lambeau Field. Bill will be there. I'll be calling into our game day show from Los Angeles to give you my thoughts on it. But you guys.
Packers by 10.
Packers by 10. That's a bold. They're 6.5-point favorites right now.
I'm going bigger.
Bigger. Why?
Jaden Reed's back.
Yeah. Is he officially back? Was that this morning?
He was on a pitch count, though.
He was. That's okay. Yeah. We only need him down in the red zone.
All right. So you're very confident about that.
I'm very confident.
I feel good. I don't believe in the Bears.
Oh, really?
The Bears suck.
Don't suck. By definition, they don't suck.
They are the worst 8-3 team I've ever seen.
Well, they're 9-3. But
it's not real.
Do you believe in the Packers? Because the Packers, I mean, some people would say that our record is flimsy. Do you think we're better than what our record says?
We are the best December team in the last decade.
That is true.
I think
that
the Packers are a legitimate top six in the NFL contender. The Bears are way down.
Well, we're going to find out in the next 3 weeks. We play them twice, one here, one there, and they moved that one down there to the primetime Sunday night.
They did.
Yes. All right. Your thoughts, Packers, Bears?
I think the Packers will win, but that's just optimism. I'm not going.
We're
going
to beat the brakes off them twice. It's going to be incredible.
Nothing would be sweeter than just blow them off the field, which we all remember that 42-0 halftime score about 8 years ago. That was awesome. I saw Bears fans crying at that game. That's how brutal that was. I would love that. I want Ben Johnson to cry after the game. I want to put more clothes back on his body and not take more off.
Brewers beat the Cubs. We're going to beat the Bears.
I asked this very poignant question earlier this week on the show. Have NFL coaches gotten hotter?
Yes.
Yeah, I think they have.
Bill McCaution?
So they've gotten younger.
I don't know.
You're not going to answer. He pleads the fifth.
You can't sit here and say, man,
all right.
LaFleur,
have
Sean
fun
McVay
without me
man.
Next week. Man. Bill McCaution and Joseph Pecky, the smartest guys in the room always. We got local news with Connie Weber, of course. Here's now the latest from ABC. You know, since we planned that music, and, you know, I've been under this idea for a few years now because I've done it when I was solo. I love to get going on the Christmas music because it puts you in, the right frame of mind. And I mentioned it during my grab bag, the fact that people show up and donate to Cap Goes Kids at Christmas and show up at the trivia nights, which we've had a bunch of them. And people are so generous. So I like to keep it positive during this time of year. And people, I mean, you know, you've done this long enough. You know that there's so many negative things we could just dwell on. And we do some of that with Bill and Joe. I mean, we like throw barbs at each other. But ultimately, for me, doing this now for almost 10 years at WTMJ, I think there can be not a pause, but sort of a reset and say, okay, why do we have to be like
angry all the time?
And nasty to each other. And, you know, even some of the texters are, you know, having that. They play that game where they want to like tweak us. And what was the one I got yesterday? You need to spend more time in hair and makeup. And you were talking about when you got, it's like, why?
No, I said the best one I've gotten recently is someone commenting saying, hey, Medusa, did you cut that hair yet?
Yeah, right. So I, you know, we're going to do a segment after this about paying it forward. And I don't just do it because it's, you know, trendy or people are talking about it. I think you should do it all year long. And I try to do it all year long. And there's a lot of things you can do that are, you know, I actually listen to the listeners because someone always challenged me. Well, what if you don't have the means? There's tons of free stuff you can do. Mm-hmm. Just be nice to people. And, you know, in this industry, sort of the mindset and the sort of the moneymaker has been to be nasty to the other side. Right. And I think, you know, again, patting ourselves on the back, one of the things we try to do, especially with this show on Friday, is demonstrate that we can completely disagree on things. You know, whether it's our policy with Venezuela, whether it's, you know, the boat strike.
We can disagree on facts.
On facts, yeah. So, I mean, we are a microcosm or maybe a macrocosm in the sense that we have four people in the studio of what other people talk about. I think there's an opportunity to sort of do it differently. And again, this is self-promotion, but hell, it's Friday and we have the opportunity.
And you're going on vacation.
And I'm going on vacation, so I have plenty of time to relax and think about a lot of things. But two things. I think we can all be more positive. And that if I'm going to have a mission statement for 2026, it's to be more positive in the way that I do my job, the way that we approach topics. Because it's so easy to just be snarky and just blow people up. Because I go on social media, I see what happens. I don't like that. And I'm sort of getting sick of it.
Does that mean I can challenge you when you're being negative?
It means I can challenge you when you're being negative.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. Same thing.
Hold each other accountable. Accountability buddies.
Did you just create that now?
No, you've never heard that term before?
I've never
before?
Heard that term yeah. in my life. But I think it's important to do it in a different way. And maybe I'm naive, and you can send the text if you think I'm being politically naive. I'm not necessarily optimistic about a lot of our leaders in politics. I don't think they're necessarily thinking like I'm thinking. But the alternative is to just go down the hellhole of hyper-partisanship, essentially completely red and blue states, because I don't know how you read the...
Is that what you were getting at when you
yes.
asked that question? As
how
far
that,
as just having states that, like, you either live in a Republican state or you live in a Democratic state, and that's it?
Yes, because if you carve out state by state where all of the electeds are of one party, how is that not that? And is that really a good thing? That's why I asked the question, what would that ultimately look like if all the blue states did that and all the red states did? What would that number be? I don't know. I may do some research while I'm on vacation looking at that. It's dangerous to think that way, but I'm not sure that's not where America is going. Red state, blue state, all the way. If you don't like it, move.
I mean, I think some people already do that, though.
Sure, absolutely.
Right? I mean, that was the conversation as far as, especially after COVID, of how many people were leaving New York or California because they were frustrated with how it was dealt and sure. people moving to Texas. But then it would be interesting to see how many people end up moving back, especially when we talk about the New York thing, because New York City is New York City.
Yeah.
There is no...
Nothing like
there's
it.
There's nothing like New York City. And if you love New York for what New York is, even with higher taxes, I don't know if you're leaving. because I've had friends, like I have a friend who works in private equity and was making a lot of money. And so was first looking at Puerto Rico and then ended up moving to Austin because there's no income tax. And he hated it. And he went back to New York because it's just like, it's a different, like where you choose to live. And I think about this a lot as far as whether we're thinking about people who choose to leave their home because of safety reasons and because things are hard there. And like we're talking about Venezuela and people leaving that country because of how what a mess it is. Or we're talking about states when they're going through a lot of hard times. But I think about the roots I have put down in Milwaukee and how happy I am here and the how bad it would actually have to be for me to make the decision to leave.
Yeah.
And that's not, and like elected, like a governor who I don't like isn't going to make me leave. There's a think about how many people who were unhappy during the Walker years and the years of the Republican legislature and felt like Wisconsin was going in the wrong way for if you were a Democrat or a left-leaning person. They stayed, right? And it's like people's homes are their homes. And so you work and you stay to ideally make an impact and have them continue to get better in the way that you think is the best for your family and the most amount of people. But I do think that this idea that you're just going to leave because of the party that's in charge, I don't think that's how people work. Like, I think people are too attached to their communities and their neighborhoods and their livelihoods there. Maybe not. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but
it's kind of like, again, I don't want to blow up talk radio because I work in talk radio, but listening to someone that just agrees with you all the time, how is that interesting? I don't get that. The reason I read different things or watch different things is because I want to see
you mean with someone who agrees with you all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you said disagree.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I agree. It's just boring to me. I get nothing out of that other than like some weird cheerleading thing. I don't see that.
Who do you think you agree with? Who do you listen to that you do agree with the most, do you think?
As far as what? Commentators?
I don't know. Just in general. Like, I think about the range of podcasts when I have time to listen of things that I listen to. I'm like, who do I listen to that I listen to? And I'm like, oh my God, I don't agree with anything that they say versus that confirmation bias that you're seeking sometimes when you listen to people who are, you think are smarter than you, but you do agree with.
I know Kara Swisher's smarter than me.
I know Kara Swisher's smarter than
me. I know Scott
Galloway's
smarter than me. And they both do separate podcasts and one together. I know Neil deGrasse Tyson on his Star Talk podcast is way smarter than me. And
But do you disagree with them?
I've disagreed with Kara Swisher. Okay. Yeah, yeah. But not to promote her podcast on, but she had Scott Jennings on. It was a brilliant conversation.
I still have to finish that one.
It's great. They don't agree on anything, pretty much. But listening to the other side is important. All right, after the break, on that same theme, some pay it forward ideas. I got some new ones today. And
I got one.
All right.
I got a free one.
And if you have one, send it in, because maybe we'll steal it. It's 620 WTMJ. Oh, thank you, Bruce Springsteen, the boss, celebrating the arrival of Santa Claus and Christmas. I love Pay It Forward. And every day I try to give people a couple of different ideas, and there's free ones. This one, I don't know if I said it last week or not, but if I didn't, I read a lot of books. I know you do too as well. And I love to have a library, and I'm kind of really weird about it.
Are you going to steal mine?
Oh, did I steal it?
I don't know.
All right, is it book themed?
Yes.
All right, go, do it.
So one of the things that brings me the most joy is that we have a little free library our yard. And truly, watching strangers walk by and peruse it, walking in there and like me putting more books in and seeing that someone else has filled it up generously, it gives me so much joy. And so if you have extra books lying around the house, a lot of them are registered too. So you can find little free libraries that are in your neighborhood and go donate some books to a little free library. I promise you they get used and they get circulated. I can attest that ours, I don't think there's a single book in there that lasts more than a week.
Yeah.
As far as people, even the random things that you don't think are going to get picked up ultimately do. And so that was going to be mine. As far as if you have some extra books, go donate to a little free library in your neighborhood.
Yeah, that was going to be mine. So I actually assembled like 10 hardcover books that I'm going to find a little.
Give me some. I'll put them in mine.
Oh, there you go. All right. That makes it easy for me. So that's an easy one. Another one, with the approval of a senior center's leadership team or asking first, if you can write some notes or send some Christmas cards over there and just say, hey, whoever you think might need a little pick-me-up during the holidays, can you please get this to them? Or maybe a nice thing, if they're okay with it, a little home-baked chocolate chip cookies or Christmas cookies, maybe store-bought so they maybe feel more confident about the cooking process for the people that live there, because they do have dietary restrictions. But having been to a lot of these places in the last couple of years for a lot of different reasons, family members included, it's not the most exciting, you know, place to be. I mean, I know they do a lot of activities, but they're often just looking for a conversation. And one of the coolest things that I used to be able to do when I was mayor, and I'm not saying for that reason, is when I was always invited to the 100th birthday celebrations of the people at Meadowmere in Oak Creek.
Oh, that's fun.
It was the most awesome. First of all, these people blew me away at 100. Like, I danced with one of them. Yeah. She was like, I mean, she could have been 70. I mean, this woman was like looking good at 100. That is the thing, that little moment of connection. We all can be better at this, and it goes to what I was just talking about. And maybe, Kathy said this to me the other day, maybe it's because I'm getting older that I think this way more now. That's probably part of it, because you see the times coming, right?
Mortality.
Yeah, and it makes you think about things you say or how you treat people. So I think these things are important. If you want to talk about one that costs you money, just find a charity that needs your help. I did three of these on Giving Tuesday, and I'm not doing to brag. If you can donate $5 or $20, find a charity in your community, whether it's South Milwaukee or Waukesha or Milwaukee proper. Just donate what you can. They're gonna put that money to good use. And the other one is, if you have canned goods or something that you can donate, find a local food bank. They will always, always accept that donation, not just at this time of year. So those are the easy ones.
All right.
Pay it forward.
Do I got to come up with original ones next week while you're out?
Yes, every day. So don't sleep on that.
I got to review what you said already so I can come up with some new ones for next week.
I'll send you my list.
Also, if you have any, let us know. Yeah. And this is a good time. I'm going to compile all of them and put them in the newsletter this week. So if you've not subscribed to the newsletter, text EXTRA to 855-616-1620. We took kind of a little break last week for the holiday. We will have a new edition this Sunday, 9 a.m., wrapping up this week's shows, giving Steve's recommendations, my recommendations, our suggestions for Pay It Forward. Mm-hmm. So shoot us a text at 855-616-1620 and text EXTRA, and we will send you the link to subscribe. Anything else?
No, just do something positive this holiday. I know we all get wrapped up in the politics of the day and the week and the month and the year, but do something positive. That's my message. All right, we'll wrap this edition as I head off to vacation. Aren't you jealous?
I am jealous.
Yeah, you were just on vacation.
Yeah, but I didn't go to Mexico.
No. Well, I'm starting in Los Angeles. So.
Yeah, I was here. I did a staycation. Right. I was in the cold.
All right. She's not angry, but she's definitely got some thoughts about it. All right, we'll come back after.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee from the Annex Wealth Management Studios. This is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
Oh, the Chipmunks. I used to have that album that they did back in the 60s. I wish I still had that album.
What was your favorite cartoon character as a kid?
I don't know.
Bugs Bunny.
Tom and Jerry was cool. Oh. They were always going. Roadrunner, that one was good with the, what was the other part of that equation? The Roadrunner and whatever it was. I'm not a big, huge cartoon guy, though.
Even as a kid?
Yeah. And
what was your go-to entertainment as a kid?
We got the hell out of the house.
We were never watching TV. You weren't radio. What does Ralphie have to do on the radio? I know you're not that old, but like, what is he decoding?
Yeah, yeah. The decoder ring? Is
the decoder ring, but yeah. Who was the character? Like, what was the radio show he was listening to?
I don't remember.
Okay.
It was Little Orphan Annie.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah. So
that's actually before.
So
me,
you got out of the house. So there wasn't like a show or something that you really identified.
I always amaze people because I've never watched a complete episode of The Simpsons or any of the animated programs that are on television. I've never watched any complete show of those.
Hmm.
You know, what's the other ones that are really popular?
Family Guy?
Family Guy, I've never seen that. It's just not my thing. But people love them. I mean, Simpsons is like a dynasty.
Still on, which is crazy. I haven't watched that show in like 10 years.
A couple people sent in some ideas. When you serve someone, when someone serves you personally in a business or healthcare situation, they're helpful, cheerful, and clearly competent. I'm not sure what that was about. Personally, thank them and if possible, contact their supervisor. Yep. Kudos to whoever's doing the great work. I always say, it's why I buy drinks for medical professionals, because they do great work. They help people for a living, and they do a great job, and they put a smile on your face when you're not feeling great. So continue to do that. All right, you put a smile on my face. Always fun doing the show.
Have fun this week.
I will have
I'll
a lot
you.
Of fun. It'll be very relaxing.
Yeah, this is hopefully a you're in show. A positive mood.
I will be in
when
a
you come back, mm-hmm. and we will bring in the holidays. You'll be tan.
Mm-hmm.
I'll hold down the fort while you're not here.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be great.
Have fun. Great guests as always. Thanks for listening today. And always on Point Taken. You can find us, of course, at WTMJ.com. News is next on 620 WTMJ.